Hare Krishna. So to begin, I would like to speak about cows. Because we are in the midst of cows. Kamal Krishna Goswami's disappearance day, which is the same as Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's disappearance day, I went to the Bhaktivedanta Ashram at Govardhan, and after the program in the late afternoon, His Holiness Keshava Bharati Das Goswami and I wanted to just talk. And so we were thinking of where to talk. And he suggests we sit near the cows. And he said that when Srila Prabhupada entered the cow shed in Gita Nagari, he said that the cows are so auspicious that just by associating with the cows, you come to the mode of goodness. So we sat and talked for about 2 hours, and I could feel the influence of the mode of goodness from being with the cows. Then just about a week ago, I visited the Govardhan Eco Village outside of Mumbai. And we took a tour of the Goshala. And one of the devotees was visiting from another community that had cows in Europe. And he commented to Radhanath Swami that the Indian breeds seem to be more peaceful than the breeds that they have in Europe. And he said that their cows are like more fiery, they don't let you pet them and so on. But then Radhanath Swami said that our cows also used to be fiery, but they changed by association with the devotees. And he said that he gave an instruction or made a request that everyone in the community there, and there's I think about, it's a large community, there's I think 75 brahmacharis and some families, and that everyone in the community should spend at least 3 hours a week with the cows. And so, because of his instruction, so many devotees started to come and spend time with the cows and like petting them and brushing them and I guess even milking them, cleaning up, whatever different service they could do. And then the temperament of the cows changed so that now they're like very peaceful and accessible. So, anyway, just so, yes. Cows are good. So now we're quite close to the end of the chapter on Prajalpa. But we are coming to a topic that in one sense doesn't need to be discussed, because if we follow the instruction not to speak about others, then we don't have to worry about blaspheming devotees, because we won't be talking about others. In fact, if we follow the instruction Satyatam Kirtayantam Mama, if we follow the instruction to engage always in glorifying Krishna, we don't even have to hear about not talking about others. In fact, we don't even have to continue this discussion because all we have to do is just constantly talk about Krishna. But in that first verse, principal verse, Smartavya Satyatam Vishnur, Vishmartavya Najatu Chit. The apparent meaning is that one should always remember Krishna and one should never forget him. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that actually in this context, Satyatam does not mean always remember Krishna. Because if one could always remember Krishna, there would be no need for the prohibition to never forget Krishna. So the fact that there's a prohibition to never forget Krishna means that we cannot, in our stage, always remember Krishna. Because if we did, there'd be no question of forgetting him. There would be no need for such prohibition. So, but yes, in our stage we do need both, and therefore we try to remember Krishna as much as possible, and we try to avoid things that will interfere with our remembrance of Krishna, such as talking unnecessarily in general and unnecessarily about others in particular. But now we come right at the very end of the chapter on Prajalpa to what could be the worst kind of talking about others. Speech in the form of blaspheming sadhus is the source of great inauspiciousness. If one wants to attain devotion to Lord Hari, then he should make a vow like this. Do you want to attain devotion to Lord Hari?
Yes. Right.
So you should make a vow like this. In this life, I will never blaspheme sadhus. Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues, devotees are sadhus. By blaspheming them, all one's virtues are destroyed. By blaspheming the supremely pure Lord Mahadev, who's Lord Mahadev? Lord Shiva. Prajapati Daksha, the best of ascetics, met with severe inauspiciousness. And as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.46, Ayushriyam yasho dharmam lokan ashishta evacha anti shrayam sisarvani humso mahad atikrama. My dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. So, because we live in the association of devotees, or frequently associate with devotees, if we have any of those tendencies to talk about others, impelled by envy or the desire for reputation, then we go beyond just talking about others into the realm of sadhu ninda, which brings us into the realm of nama parad. And because it's such a crucial topic, we'll read a little from Bhaktivinoda Thakur about the offense against the holy name of sadhu ninda, or criticizing devotees. And this discussion comes in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book called Sri Hari Nam Chintamani, The Beautiful Wish Fulfilling Gem of the Holy Name. And in order to properly understand sadhu ninda, we have to understand what is a sadhu. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, and this is a general principle in definitions, that there are two parts. There is the swarup lakshana, which is the sort of intrinsic, inherent characteristic of the person or the thing. And then there's the tatastha lakshana, which is the marginal characteristic. So the swarup lakshana is always there, whereas the tatastha lakshana may be there under certain circumstances. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes about 26 qualities of a devotee. And among the 26 qualities, one is the swarup lakshana, the inherent characteristic of a devotee, and that is Krishnaika Sharanam. He takes exclusive shelter of Krishna, or of the holy name of Krishna. And the other 25, like, say, being humble, being tolerant, those are tatastha lakshanas, and those will gradually develop. They may not all be present immediately, but they will gradually develop by the performance of sadhana bhakti, especially offenseless chanting of the holy names. But for example, being tolerant, that's a tatastha lakshana, because that quality may not be demonstrated unless there's something to tolerate. Whereas taking exclusive shelter of Krishna, taking full shelter of Krishna, that's there no matter what. Or say one is Nitya Bhuk, he doesn't eat more than necessary. So that quality is demonstrated when he eats, or when he refuses to eat. But it's not manifest all the time. But the inherent quality of full surrender to Krishna, that's always there in any circumstance. So if someone has that swarup lakshana, he is considered a devotee or a sadhu. And even if he doesn't fully manifest all the other qualities immediately, he is still considered a sadhu or a devotee. And criticizing him or her for some deficiency in those other qualities counts as sadhu ninda. It is an offense. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur will discuss a few of the grounds on which someone might criticize a devotee, but which are not really grounds that justify it. And there are basically four that he mentions. One is a devotee's sinful activities from before he or she surrendered to Krishna, before he or she came into the association of devotees. So to talk about a devotee's previous sinful activities is an offense. Sadhu-nimba. Even after coming to the association of devotees and taking up the practice of chanting the holy names, there may still be some vestiges of past sinful activities. And so to criticize a devotee for those vestiges of past sinful activities is also an offense. Srila Prabhupada told a story about that once there was a shoe thief who became a devotee. And so he joined a party that was going on a pilgrimage by train. So in the morning, when all the other yatris woke up, no one could find their shoes. And then eventually they started finding them in all different places on the train. And nobody could understand what happened. And then the former shoe thief admitted that he had done it, that he had that habit of stealing shoes. But he knew it wasn't good to steal shoes, but he couldn't totally control that urge. So he would take the shoes, but he wouldn't actually steal them, but he would just move them to some other place. So their shoes ended up being scattered in different places. So that's an example of traces of a past bad habit. Then a fourth category, which is a little different, is an accidental fall down. It may happen that a devotee has an accidental fall down, and to criticize the devotee for the accidental fall down is an offense. And the fourth, I guess, is to not fully manifest all of the good qualities of a devotee. Because those will come. And then also some of those depend on a person's position. Let me double check, is that not? Oh yes, I knew it when I began. His caste. Yeah. An offender against a sadhu is one who criticized a Vaishnava about his caste. Some unpremeditated accidental fall down. The last traces of his previous sins or his sinful activities prior to his surrendering to Lord Krishna. This offender will never develop a taste for chanting the name. One who has taken complete shelter of the pure devotional process is considered a pure Vaishnava. The four above mentioned faults may be present in him, but he is totally free from all the other shortcomings. Hence, criticizing him spells doom for the offender. The glories of the holy name are propagated by the Vaishnava. Lord Krishna does not tolerate any criticism against him. Now, we come to a very interesting discussion which relates to the earlier discussion about speaking about others when it's allowed. It's allowed if the guru needs to clarify a point by a negative example. Because we have to know what's right and we have to know what's wrong. And this next point is something, it's something that Srila Prabhupada confronted a lot. And I'll tell a very nice story about one such case. Because, okay, we've discussed who is a sadhu. But there are other people who are not sadhus. But general people think they're sadhus. And so if a preacher criticizes such a person who's not really a sadhu, ordinary people may criticize the preacher. And that happened a lot because Prabhupada criticized a lot of people who were not sadhus, really, but who were accepted as sort of popular religious figures in India. So there are three categories. Well, actually, a more basic point is to avoid bad association, because one becomes offensive through bad association. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, asat sang tyaga e vaishnava charna. The behavior of a Vaishnava is to avoid the association of asat, means non-devotees. And then he describes categories of non-devotees. Asat sang tyaga e vaishnava charna. Stri sangi ek asadu. Asadu means not a sadhu. Sri Sangi means, could mean associating with a woman for sense gratification or a man who associates with women for sense gratification. Asat Sang Tyaga Evaishnara Navachar Sri Sangi Eka Sadhu Krishna Bhakta Ar. And the other category is just someone who's not a devotee. So that in that category of non-devotee, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses three categories. There are three kinds of non-devotees. The Mayavadi, the Dharma Dvaji, pretender. Dvaja means flag. And dharma means religion. So like they wave the flag of being religious, but they're pretenders. They're not really devotees. And the third category, I guess there are many everywhere, but somehow this last category seems, there's some prominent ones in England, no offense. The Nirishwara, the atheist. Actually, they're everywhere, I shouldn't have said that. But I learned that there are churches of atheists in England. I hadn't heard of that in other places. They get together and they sing mundane songs like, I mean, I'm making it up, but for he's a jolly good fellow. And they have their katha. They have their katha, which is atheistic. It's like a regular church program or temple program of atheists. Nirishwara, no Ishwara, no God. Mayavadis do not accept that the Supreme Lord's form is eternal. They say the deity form of the Lord is illusory or Maya, and that the Jiva is also a product of Maya. But we know what Mayavadis are, I think. And if you don't, you should learn. A Dharma Dvaji is a person who has no devotion or attachment in the heart, but makes a show of it externally. He wears the clothes of a devotee to accomplish materialistic ends. And a Nir Ishvara is a non-believer, an atheist. A serious aspirant or sadhaka must shun such bad association. In other words, he shouldn't associate with any of these three categories. What are the three?
Good.
Now, listen to this. If anyone argues that criticizing such non-devotees is sadhu ninda, his company must also be meticulously avoided. One has to keep away from bad association and take complete shelter of the holy name. Only then is love of Godhead ensured. So, I'm going to speak about Srila Prabhupada and his companion named Dr. Patel. I hope you all listen to Srila Prabhupada's recorded lectures and conversations. But every morning in Juhu, and Srila Prabhupada spent a lot of time in Juhu, he would walk on Juhu Beach with Dr. Patel. And Dr. Patel was a very intelligent person. He knew Sanskrit, he'd studied in England, and even having studied in England, he maintained his strict principles, Vaishnav principles of behavior. And he was a very good conversationalist. He would come every morning, and he and Srila Prabhupada would have very instructive talks. And some of them were friendly and some of them became a little heated. And one morning it became extremely tense. So Dr. Patel was speaking about a famous religious leader, so-called religious leader of India. And Srila Prabhupada said that actually he's a rascal. But not quite as direct as that, but it came to that. What he said was, and it was his general way of assessing anyone, Namam duskritina mudha prapadyante naradama maya aparita jnana asurim bhavam ashrita. That anyone who is not surrendered to Krishna is duskritina, that means miscreant. Namam duskritina mudha, mudha means fool, rascal. Namam duskritina buddha prapadyante naradama, the lowest of men. Maya aparita jnana, someone might appear to be very knowledgeable and learned, but his knowledge is taken away by maya. And asurim bhavamashita, or someone who partakes of the nature of a demon. So Dr. Patel became offended. And he said, how can you say that? Srila Prabhupada said, I'm not saying. Krishna's saying. I'm just repeating what Krishna says. So there was quite a discussion, and this so-called religious figure, he was a worshipper of a demigod. I don't want to give too many hints. He's a worshipper of a demigod. And Srila Prabhupada said that according to Bhagavad Gita, anyone who worships demigods is less intelligent. Alpha Medusa means less intelligent. And on top of it, this person was claiming to be God. So Prabhupada said, you know, he's less intelligent. He's not even an intelligent human being. So how can he be God? But Dr. Patel, somehow that morning, he got extremely upset. He got extremely upset and he started shouting at Srila Prabhupada that you can't speak like this about him. You can't speak like this. And Prabhupada saying, I'm not saying, Krishna's saying, I'm only repeating what Krishna's saying. And Dr. Patel became so angry that he was shouting at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was shouting back at him. And Dr. Patel, you know, because of his learning and his piety, or, well, principles, and he was sort of like the leader of his friends. He'd always have, like, his cronies with him, about, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 6, 8 with him. But even his cronies, they were trying to restrain him. And they were saying, you know, Swamiji has a heart condition. Don't argue with him like this. You know, and they were like physically trying to take him away. And of course, we disciples, we couldn't do anything. And it was like he wouldn't leave. It was like in a boxing match, you know, sometimes the bell rings to signal the end of the round, but they just keep, and the referees and they like try to pull them to their corners. It was like that. They just wouldn't stop. So for the first time in years, Dr. Patel didn't come for the morning walk. And Srila Prabhupada also said, now no more discussion, no more argument. We'll just read Krishna book. So we're like reading Krishna book. And I don't know, it was the next day or 2 days later, but Prabhupada was walking one direction on the beach, and Dr. Patel was coming from the other direction. And Prabhupada was like right near the ocean, and Dr. Patel was like a little inward. And he didn't have any plan to approach Prabhupada, but as he described it, something in his heart just drew him, as if by force, to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, and offer obeisances to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And then he said, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, but I've been taught from my childhood to respect all the accredited saints of India. And Srila Prabhupada replied, and my business is to say who is a saint and who is not a saint. So they were, anyway, they came together again, and they had a very sort of interesting relationship. After this incident, Tamal Krishna Goswami went to Srila Prabhupada and asked him you know, what is Dr. Patel's position? Because sometimes Prabhupada would accuse him of being a Mayavadi. And Dr. Patel would protest and say, no, sir, I'm not a Mayavadi, I'm a Vaishnava. And sometimes he would talk like a Vaishnava, but sometimes he would talk differently. It was hard to know. So Prabhupada told a story of a man who could speak perfectly in many different languages. And he came to a village, and no one knew what his actual mother tongue was. Whatever language people would address him in, he would reply perfectly in the same language. So finally one man said, okay, I'll find out. So when that man wasn't looking, he snuck up behind him and gave him a very strong whack on the back. And then that man began to curse in his own language. So Srila Prabhupada said that Dr. Patel, and there are others like that, they can speak very expertly in different languages. You know, like a Vaishnav, like a Shaivite, like a Mayavadi, like a whatever. But when you really hit him where it hurts, then his real language comes out. So then Tamakrishna Goswami asked, but why do you put up with him? Because I think many of the disciples felt like, why does Prabhupada entertain him? And Prabhupada replied, we have to engage everyone. That was like, so that, you know, that was Srila Prabhupada's mood, and he could do that. Because he was, you know, totally fixed in Krishna consciousness, and he could meet any argument. And those arguments are very instructive for us, and now for anyone who hears them. And there were many such cases. There was one case when we went to Indore. There was a Gita Jayanti celebration. Gita Jayanti means the anniversary of the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita. And every afternoon Srila Prabhupada would do pretty much anywhere. He would have darshan hours or visiting hours when anyone could come and see him.
Which year?
When he was in Indore?
Yes.
That was 1971. Because it was just before we got to Juhu. And, but that place in particular, Prabhupada complained that people were coming with their own opinions. And he said, they're like testing me. And if I agree with them, they think Swamiji is very good. And if I disagree with them, they think, oh, Swamiji is next. Not so good. So one night, there was a program arranged for Srila Prabhupada at Gita Hall. And then the next afternoon, as you, quite a large group of Hindu gentlemen came, maybe like 8 or 9. And Prabhupada brought up that there was no picture of Krishna in the Gita Society's hall. He said, even in a ordinary political party,
if there's a gathering, I'll have a picture of the head of the party or something.
There's no picture of Krishna. So one of the men said, well, there was a deep, a lamp. And Prabhupada said, well, where does it say in the Bhagavad Gita that you should worship a deep? And they said, well, people have been doing this for centuries in India. It's like, from the beginning, they're like arguing. And it gradually built up. And, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, that the Bhagavad Gita is not being presented properly. And our mission is to present the Bhagavad Gita properly as it is. So they thought that, you know, how can you say that you are presenting it properly and others are not? So Prabhupada explained, you know, he could explain anything he said. He justified everything he said according to Shastra, Sadhu Shastra and Guru. And then they said, it's just like this. They said, you should not criticize. You should be samadarshana. Now this is referring to a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Pandita Samadarshana, that a pandit, a learned person, he sees equally a gentle and learned Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Vidya Vinay Sampane from Bhavi Haskini. And so they said, you should not criticize, you should be samadarshana. And Srila Prabhupada replied that samadarshana is a very high platform. Samadarshana means that you don't distinguish between pious and sinful activities. Why is someone born as a Brahmin? Why is someone born as a dog? It's because of their past pious and sinful activities. So not to distinguish means that he doesn't distinguish between pious and sinful activities. And Prabhupada said, I'm not on that platform. And I see that if someone is doing nonsense, they should stop it. I don't have that darshan. So they, you know, anyway, it went back and forth. And in the end, or towards the end, they said, you know, they couldn't believe that. They said, anyway, there's so many mistakes in the Shastra. And Prabhupada said, oh no, you're criticizing Vyas. Then we cannot speak. And you get out. You're criticizing Vyas, we cannot speak. You get out. So then they sort of backtracked a little and said, well, you know, you should, then what is your contribution? Because Prabhupada is saying, I'm just repeating. Say, well, what is your contribution beyond what the previous acharyas have done? Srila Prabhupada said, I just repeat. I don't go beyond the previous acharyas. So, at a certain stage, one of Prabhupada's disciples started telling them about Prabhupada's worldwide preaching activities. And somehow they got impressed with that. You know, they got impressed with that. Maybe they quieted down a little bit. And then Prabhupada said that, yeah, they were very impressed that people from all over the world were becoming devotees. And Prabhupada said, that is my samadarshana, that my equal vision, that I have made Krishna consciousness available to people all over the world of any background. And that is my contribution to
the previous acharyas. No one before has ever done this.
So in that way, like, he
answered their questions, and in the end they were quite satisfied. But this is a problem, especially in India, where people have so many sentiments for so many non-devotees who they think are sadhus, and sometimes, as Prabhupada said, we have to say who is a sadhu and who is not a sadhu. So, I'm thinking we should leave time for questions and answers. And so I think we can end the official discussion here. Of course, there's many, much more that we could say about all of these topics, and many more examples that we could give from our own experience and from our experience with Srila Prabhupada. But I would like to hear from you whatever you would like to share or ask. Yes, Sabrinanda Puri?
Maharaj, about 2 months ago, you sent an email out which completely changed my thinking about the 1930 verse, which you alluded today. And I've become such a big fan of yours, or big fan of yours before anyway, but after that, you explained so beautifully the verse 930 as to who is a sadhu, and even if he is committing obvious mistakes. So you alluded to the primary and the secondary characteristic, which I think you were today reading to the Swarup and Tatakshya Lakshana. And I have, since then, I have used that in our management meetings, because we always have to, when we manage people, we always have to see from that vision that if their primary characteristic is love of Krishna and surrendering to Krishna, then the other faults can be sort of overlooked. Can you expand on that, Maharaj? Because I thought it was so beautiful.
I thought you just expanded on it. The verse Apichat Sudaracharo Bhajate Bhavananya Bhak. That even if someone is engaged in the most abominable activity, if he's properly situated in devotional service, Sadhur Eva Samantavya, he should be considered a sadhu or devotee. And in the next verse, Krishna says, Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma, that Krishna from within the heart will rectify him. So, yes, we should have that view of Krishna's, that if someone is properly situated in devotional service, which means Krishna Gosharanam, taking exclusive shelter of Krishna, not any demigods or anything else, then even if they engage in an abominable activity from the social point of view, not spiritually, but from the social point of view, they should be considered saintly, sadhu. And Krishna, from within the heart, very soon he will rectify them. So we should not be... we shouldn't be eager to find the faults. We should be eager to see the good. And although we just touched on what is sadhu ninda, we didn't really discuss the remedy. But there's two categories. One is that one knowingly blasphemes a devotee, and then the remedy is that one must approach the devotee and beg forgiveness sincerely. And the other is unknowingly, out of ignorance, like you don't really know who the person is and just carelessly or recklessly, like you criticize or blaspheme. And then later you realize, oh my gosh, I didn't know that this person was so elevated. So in that case, you don't have to, or at least not necessarily, approach the devotee who you offended, but you should glorify the devotee. There's a case where someone had unknowingly blasphemed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, just out of ignorance, he thought he was like a sentimentalist, singing and dancing, or whatever. Not sure exactly what he said. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if someone drinks poison, then to counteract the poison with the same tongue that drank the poison, he can like drink nectar or something to counteract the poison. So with the same tongue that you use to blaspheme, you should use the same tongue to glorify. And so that's how to deal with two broad categories of blasphemy. But we shouldn't just let it go. We have to take some remedial measure as soon as possible. You two work it out.
Thank you. Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was wondering that you mentioned that the devotee always waits for Krishna's mercy. But I wanted to know that, so whatever is happening in our life, whatever situation we go through, is that not Krishna's mercy? And like, what mercy do we wait for? Is it all not Krishna's arrangement what we go through? So what
once he has? That's a good question. I mean, in the context of the discussion of bhakti, that dharya, that patience, means not that we just simply sit and wait for Krishna's mercy and do nothing, but it means that we make our best effort and at the same time wait for Krishna's mercy. And we all will get some mercy. We can't even continue without some mercy. But we may want more mercy. And so we have to be patient and continue with our efforts. But there's another principle, that says that one who is engaged in devotional service should await the Lord's mercy while suffering the effects of painful reactions. And if one tolerates and engages in serving the Lord with body, mind, and words, tolerating the painful effects of one's past actions and expecting the Lord's mercy, then one will inherit the kingdom of God. The idea is that just as, because that Dayabak, that refers to like a child inheriting the parents' property. So
So the idea is that all that a child has to do is remain alive long enough, and he or she will inherit the parent's property. So similarly, all a devotee has to do is remain alive in Krishna consciousness by engaging in devotional service in the association of devotees. All he or she has to do is remain alive in Krishna consciousness, and he or she will inherit the kingdom of God. In other words, will be eligible for liberation.
So that's the mercy that we bring.
Well, wait means you continue your Tanuvan Manobir, you engage in service with your body, mind, and words. Yes, that's the mercy. As far as what happens to the body or the mind, that we can't say. That goes on, the dualities there. So, you know, we can't say, I'm waiting for Krishna. You know, I bought so many lottery tickets, and every time I lost, now I'm waiting. I'm patiently waiting for Krishna's mercy. One day, I'll win the lottery. That's not what we're talking about. Yes?
My question, Maharaj, is about Chaitanya Haridas. In his service to serve Mahaprabhu, he made a mistake on his, you know, just for service, by begging, he pinned up on the wrong door, and the lady served him sunrise. But now, you know, it was what a big open in Mahaprabhu's eyes. Even the devotee was pleading to Mahaprabhu to forgive him, to bring him back in his association. Mahaprabhu neglected him, and finally he committed suicide. So this is quite intense for me as well.
This incident is related in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and at the end, Srila Prabhupada quotes his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, seven lessons to be derived from the incident. But yes, Chota Haridas went to the home of Madhavi, Sikhinahiti's sister, who was a very confidential associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But she had a beautiful young daughter. And so Chota Haridas timed his visit to go there when that beautiful young daughter would be present. And so when he went, he was sort of, I don't know, maybe lustfully looking at the girl. And so, yeah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to know about it. He like banished Chota Haridas. And then Chota Haridas, you know, went to the confluence of the Ganges and Jamuna, Trivani, and he gave up his life. But after doing so, he visited. So yeah, the devotees told Mahaprabhu what happened, and Mahaprabhu said, good. But Chota Haridas would come to Mahaprabhu in an invisible form and sing for him. He was a very good kirtan leader, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was relishing his kirtan. So he actually accepted him back in his association. So, at the end of the chapter, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that, he raises that question, how could Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's the ocean of mercy and love, deal in such a
way with Chota Haridas, and he says that now the Acharya, as the head of the institution, sometimes has to set a strict standard, otherwise the standard within the institution will become slack and the spiritual vitality will be lost, and then the sincere devotees will be discouraged because of the lax devotees. But another lesson is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never neglects his devotee, because in the end he did show mercy to Chota Haridas and accepted his service again. So, and then other similar ones, lessons like that. So it's, you know, it was said of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, and it's true of an Acharya, that sometimes he was soft as a rose and sometimes he was hard as a thunderbolt. Those both may be required according to the situation. Yes. What is your good name?
Radha Charan Das.
Radha Charan Das?
That's right.
Nice.
Maharaj, when I was little, I remember my mother told me never to ask the deities for anything material. I thought that was a bit odd. Why worship anyone? But then, many, many years later, in November, you know, we have got the Damodar Ashtakam. In chapter 4, in verse 4, it says, my Lord, if you are kind and if you are pleased my service to you, please give me only the things that increase my devotion to your Lord's feet. Of course, I know that you can give me a lot of other benedictions, but none of these things makes any sense to me. I do not want those, you can keep those. So, which is true?
Well, no, we shouldn't ask anything material from the Lord, but the author of Damodar Ashtakam wasn't asking for anything material.
Exactly, yes.
So what's the contradiction?
Contradiction is many of the ISKCON preachers who sit on the Vyasashram, they actually say that if you want anything, do this, do that, and so on. So it is not exactly what Prabhupada told me, that ISKCON is about Shuddha Bhakti. Because as soon as you introduce any kind of payback, material payback, it is not Shuddha Bhakti anymore, is it? It becomes a material transaction.
That's true. But there are many statements in the scripture that offer various boons to the practitioners with the idea of attracting them to devotional service, because they're not coming as devotees, but we want to attract them to devotional service. So
are you saying that these were sort of later additions?
No, they're not later additions. The preachers are always trying to get conditioned souls to take up devotional service. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we don't preach that you'll get material benefit from devotional service, but someone may approach us with a material motive, and we might engage them. I mean, I'll give my own example. I don't know if it was a good example or not. But before coming here in the Mumbai airport, there was a lady who was sort of helping me get through immigration and different things. And then before leaving, she said, Swamiji, I want your blessings. So I said, what blessing do you want? She was like part of the airport ground staff. She said, I want to become a flight attendant. I said, well, why do you want to become a flight attendant? So she said, well, from my childhood, it's been my dream to be a flight attendant. So now that sort of put me in an awkward position. So I said, well, have you heard about the Hare Krishna temple in Juhu? And maybe vaguely, but she'd never been there. I said, you know, you should go there. And, you know, there's deities of Gornitai and Radha and Krishna and Sitaram. So you can go and, you know, pray to them. But I think you can do better than becoming a flight attendant. I think you're aiming too low. You know, you could ask for something spiritual that would give you eternal happiness and bliss. So, but I said you can also pray to become a flight attendant. I can't guarantee what the result will be, but so there are verses in Srimad Bhagavatam where the Lord says that if someone approaches me for something material, certainly he's very foolish. But I am not so foolish. So I will deal with him in such a way that he will... Yes, he said that such a person is like someone who wants to drink poison instead of ambrosia or nectar. But I will deal with him in such a way that he gives up the poison of sense gratification and drinks the nectar of my lotus feet. So there are examples. Dhruva Maharaj, he approached the Lord to get something material, but the way the Lord dealt with him, he forgot his material desires and was happy just with the Lord's service.
In this college, there is a general direction that a preacher should take with respect to this?
I would be very wary while on the Vyasa Sad to offer like material benefits for devotional service. I think
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I hope we weren't engaged in talking about others here. But maybe it was to be instructive. To be instructive. Yes. Now, what is your name? Narayan. Devi Das.
Thank you for the class. It was really helpful. From what you've been saying today, it seems like to tolerate the urge to speak is one of the primary things that we need to do in order to develop that main quality of patience. I'm really confused in that when we have, you know, when we're conditioned or full of envy and we're full of these other things, it's said in other places in the Shastra that the tongue is one of the most, it's the most difficult sense to control.
Mm.
It almost seems like a never-ending circle of when we're conditioned, we're very likely to do those things because we've got all the disqualities. But if we don't actually learn to do that, we're not going to develop the other qualities in order to actually begin to advance. So are there specific, is there like specific mentality or actions or things that we can do to help ourselves avoid that?
Yes, indeed. In fact, the verse you quoted or the prayer you quoted is very relevant. You know, Sarira Vijaja. And there's, within that, there's a solution, which you know, my dear Lord, you are so kind, you sent us this nice prasad, spiritual food, just to conquer over the tongue. So that's for eating. And then for speaking or hearing, the Lord is also very kind. And he comes himself and he manifests his pastimes to create subject matter for speaking and hearing. And he sends his devotees who are relishing discussing the glories of the Lord. And so the remedy for us is to get caught up in that flow of nectar. In fact, I'll read a nice verse. It's one of my favorites, and I used to know it by heart. Paraphrase it. Somehow it's not here. But what the verse says is that in places where pure devotees reside, strictly following the regulative principles, one should hear the flow of nectar that comes from their mouths. And if one does so, one will be freed from the necessities of life, hunger and thirst, and will become free from illusion and fear and hankering. So the idea is that we should place ourselves in such a situation where that flow of nectar, it's like an inundation, carries us away. And that's the idea. And there are many I had, I don't know why, but here's another nice one. Satam ayam sara britam nisargo yad arthavani shuchite tasamapi pratikshanam navya but achutasya yat striya vitanam ivasadu varta. Paramahansas, devotees who have accepted the essence of life, are attached to Krishna in the core of their hearts. And he is the aim of their lives. It is their nature to talk only of Krishna at every moment, as if such topics were newer and newer. They are attached to such topics just as materialists are attached to topics of women and sex. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 10.13.2.
So we need to be in that association and to get caught up in it. And that's the remedy.
Thank you.
Yes. At the back.
Can you hear me? I would have been interested by the scene of Rian Kamakrishna Maharaj with the initial you know, fight with the Maya and everything. So in the context of patience, which we're talking about today, Rian Kamakrishna Maharaj, in my opinion, have different natures. So how did it manifest, if you could describe how it plays out patience in different types of people? My nature is not like yours, Marjorie. You're very simple, you know, very, how can I say, thoughtful and very, you take your time to think about things and everything comes out very perfectly. I'm much more passionately involved. So I'm just interested to see how the Kamakrishna Maharaj show patience and how did it work between the two of you cooperating with the principle of patience for that success.
Well, can we go back to Utsaha Nischayat Daryat? So actually, these two are both required. Utsaha, that means enthusiasm, and Daryat means patience. And we actually need both. Srila Prabhupada said that patience without enthusiasm can lead to lethargy. And enthusiasm without patience can lead to a desire to control. So we actually need both. And I mean, I don't know if you were like hinting that Kamal Krishna Goswami supplied more of the enthusiasm and I supplied more of the patience. But it's possible. Because without me, it might have been more of like the desire to control. And without him, it might have been a little lethargy. So it was a good combination. Yes?
And so, Marsh, follow on from that. Is it like that in life that if we, according to our nature, we find limitation for reaching particular ideals, that then we should come together with people who have that quality and work together? Or should we just be, as best we can, be patient until it manifests because we're a spirit soul and it's there somewhere?
Well, Srila Prabhupada always gave the example of the blind man and the lame man. The blind man may be physically very strong, but he can't go anywhere because he's blind. And the lame man may have perfect vision, but he also can't go anywhere because he's lame or crippled. But if the blind man takes the lame man on his shoulders, then together they can go forward. And I think in general that's what our association is meant to accomplish, that we complement each other. We may be strong in one area and weak in another area, and so we get together with other devotees and we each of us provides whatever strength we can, and that combination is very strong. And internally, individually, we can try to improve in different areas if we're weaken patience. We can learn how to increase in patience. That was the subject of today's discussion. But association is very important, even in our internal work. It's very helpful to associate with devotees who are, stronger than we are in a certain area, or maybe more advanced than we are in general. That makes everything better. And we can also associate with the cows. By associating with the cows, we'll come to the mode of goodness, and then that passionate mood can subside by their association. Good association. Yes?
Thank you so much. Thank you. Sorry, I was late in the beginning. But I don't know. You could say with the couple, I know that I'm coming from Macedonia and I have Kshatriya blood. But compared to my husband, he's completely Brahma, he's so shanti, and he's so different. And always I'm so much, I don't have patience at all. So is that what he said? Was this, sorry.
It could be.
Now, he's helping me. He's teaching me how to become more shanti. And I'm spending time with the cows. But what is beneficial with him? To be with me.
I think that's the answer. Well, maybe you get things done, and you're getting things done relieves him of having to get them done, so he can be more peaceful. I don't know, but as long as it's working, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. Sorry?
16 years, I said, you're together, so it looks like
he's
working.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, you could tell him what you're getting out of it and ask him what he's getting out of it. Or not. Maybe just keep it, yeah.
Forgive me for asking a second question. Quite often you find that in lectures on sitting in the Vyasasana, you wonder sometimes because they make you feel as though all you need to do is to thin in the, keep your nose clean with regard to the regulatory principles, and also 16 rounds. And if you do that, the tacit understanding is that you will go to Vaikuntha. But we also notice from Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's chapter, it says, you will have to work, that is your right. But what the result will be is not in your hands. Could you comment on that, please?
Well, earlier I read from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that the fruitive workers want elevation to heavenly planets. The jnanis want impersonal liberation. And the devotees want Krishna's pleasure. And to achieve Krishna's pleasure, they require patience. Because achieving Krishna's pleasure may not be that easy. And I had some other verses. I actually have great faith in this process of speaking with devotees, because so many points come up from the devotees that I was prepared for but somehow didn't include in the class proper. But to to really achieve Krishna's pleasure, one has to engage in unavoidable, uninterrupted devotional service. I mean, yes, he's also pleased if we just make any effort. And yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada, if we please the spiritual master, then Krishna's pleased. But he's really pleased when we do all of those things and become pure devotees. And so, I think a good example was Lord Chaitanya and his spiritual master. You might know this from Chaitanya Charitamrita, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his spiritual master, told him to, you know, chant the holy names. And by chanting the holy names, he began to manifest ecstatic symptoms. But he didn't know they were ecstatic symptoms. He just thought that he was becoming crazy, like singing, dancing, like a madman.
Crying all the time.
Yes, yeah. So he started thinking that maybe by the effect of the mantra, he's becoming crazy. So he approached his spiritual master, and his spiritual master was very pleased. And this is what his spiritual master told him. Balahaila Pile Tumi Parama Purushartha Tomara Pramete Ami Hailan Kritartha. It is very good, my dear child, that you have attained the supreme goal of life by developing love of Godhead. Thus you have pleased me very much, and I am very much obliged to you. Well, that's what pleases Krishna. And that takes time to come to that stage. And so we have to patiently persevere and control the urge to speak.
Thank you.
And yes.
How do you maintain your enthusiasm?
How do you maintain your enthusiasm? Well, Srila Prabhupada said that if we follow the regulative principles, we'll be enthusiastic. So if we are lacking in enthusiasm, it may be an indication that we need to follow the regulative principles more strictly. And by regulative principles, I don't mean the four principles of no eating meat, fish, or eggs, no taking of intoxicants, no engaging in illicit sex, and no gambling. Those are not the regulative principles of devotional service. Those are the regulative principles to become a human being. The regulative principles of devotional service are, you know, chanting and hearing about Krishna, remembering him, worshipping the deity, associating with devotees. So if we do those, then we'll maintain our enthusiasm. And always association. If you associate with enthusiastic devotees, that will also help you to be enthusiastic. But those enthusiastic devotees will be following. You can't really maintain enthusiasm without following. Oh, yeah. Association is so much. So much is association. In fact, once Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is 90% association. So anything, chanting, japa, association, speaking Krishna katha, hearing Krishna katha, association. Now, one thing about hearing from others, I didn't mention it in the class, but somehow it occurred to me. sometimes people have something on their mind about another person. And it's like they feel they have to talk to someone about it. Otherwise they'll just explode. So what do you do in such a case? It may be that you listen to the person just to give them a way of releasing all of that energy. Because if they don't release that energy, it can just build up, and like I said, they could explode, and not physically, but just explode. So
one solution would be to speak to or communicate with your Guru Maharaj.
Yes, well, that's another point, that who is the right person for them to speak to? I mean, they may not particularly want to escalate the matter, but they just want to talk to someone to get it off their chest. So in that case, you can listen to it in the mood of service, you know, so they have someone that they can speak to in confidence. Can we get number four? So this is also a very important verse. I knew it was there for a reason. Guyam Akiti Prichati, that one should inquire confidentially. One should reveal one's mind in confidence. So we need to be able to do that. And suppose I'm having an issue with someone and I just need to speak to someone about it. So that person who I speak to has to be confidential. Otherwise it'll be, they tell A tells B, B tells C, and eventually it gets back to the person, and it's a disaster.
Yes.
So for our culture, it's essential to have these confidential relationships. Otherwise, as we mentioned, the culture of envy, you just talk bad about others. So, and then we lose this very important part of our spiritual nourishment because we're afraid that the other person won't be confidential. So, yeah. But that point about, you know, if they just want to get it off their chest. They don't necessarily want to take it further, but they just want to be able to speak to someone. But the other is they may want some action to be taken. And then they should approach someone who's in a position to first of all assess whether intervention is warranted. That's the first thing, because unless our hearts are clean, we may be influenced by envy or pride. So we may see a fault that's not even really there, or it may be a little something, and in our minds we're making it much bigger. So we want to be able to approach someone in confidence who can tell us, yes, actually there is a problem there, or actually I don't really see a problem there. I think it might be more you, there may be something inside of you that's making you see it as something so...
It seems to me at the basic level it is low-level psychoanalysis, nothing more than that.
So if someone approaches you because they want someone to do something, then you should ask them, do I really need to hear this? I mean, suppose you tell me where is it going to go from here? And then when you say, do I really need to hear this? They might think, well, yeah, do I really need to say this? And that could just stop the whole thing. But if it does turn out there's something that requires intervention, then it would be worth speaking to the person's authority. Then that's someone who can do something about it. It's not idle talk.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, one last question.
Maharaj, yesterday you were mentioning that it was the disappearance day of Sri Prabhupada's disciple, Solanus, Srila Maharaj. And so you could understand a little bit better about who is a sadhu and who isn't. Why don't you could just kind of say a little bit about Srila Maharaj's life in service to Srila Prabhupada.
Well, I mean, His Holiness Sridhar Swami was a very staunch disciple of Srila Prabhupada's. I mean, I could speak about him for a long time. But, you know, we were both together in Juhu. And there were two friends, very, very wealthy people. Actually, both of them were married to daughters of different Birlas. They're like the wealthiest family in India then. And so they gave Maharaj the nickname the Jolly Swami, because he was always jolly and he always made jokes. So I'll take one incident from the history in Juhu. So, in brief, Srila Prabhupada entered an agreement with Mr. Nair to buy the land, and then Mr. Nair canceled the agreement on some pretext. But Srila Prabhupada had a sense that he should bring the deities of Radha and Krishna onto the property, because, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. And so we built a semi-permanent temple. And then, you know, the way things work, maybe it's true everywhere, but maybe it's just more open there. But so Mr. Nair's wife, after Mr. Nair died, so she, I guess, got some life insurance money, and she used it to bribe the municipal workers and the police, and they came and demolished the temple. Not the little room where the deities were in, but the part in front of it. So then there was like a big campaign to like get permission to rebuild it. But the thing is, we already had permission to build it. So, you know, at the right time, somehow it just dawned on us that we don't actually need permission to rebuild it, because we already had permission to build it. So that was on a Friday. And we decided we'll just rebuild it. And I don't know, somehow Mrs. Nair had her spies, and she found out about it. So she went to the court to get an injunction to stop us from rebuilding the temple. And the judge said, no, I won't give the injunction without hearing the other side. So she said, we'll just give a temporary injunction until Monday, and then hear the other side, and then make your final decision. He said, no, I won't even give a temporary injunction till Monday. So we knew we had until Monday to rebuild it, because once it was rebuilt, there would be no meaning to getting an injunction to stop us from rebuilding. So we had a very strong, a number of friends helped with this project, and we had one very staunch devotee there named Mr. Sethi, P.L. Sethi. And he was, he definitely had the Kshatriya spirit. He was from Punjab, he had a big body also. And it was raining very heavily, and so anyway, so Tamal Krishna Goswami was the GBC and I was the temple president. And just around that time, Satsrupa Maharaj had visited, and he was my first temple president, and I felt he was like very humble, and I liked his way. And so Tamal Krishna Goswami said, I want you to stay up all night and make sure that this temple is rebuilt. And I don't know why, but I just said, I just sort of blurted out that, I really like Satsrupa Maharaj. He just came and he's like so humble. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, your humility will be staying up all night and making sure that this temple gets rebuilt. And I thought about it, and I thought, it's true. It's true, If I don't do the needful, then where's the humility? Humility means you do whatever you're asked to do, whatever is required. So I stayed up. And so Mr. Nair's like sort of right hand man in the municipal corporation, he came and he said, you can rebuild the temple, but I'm going to come with 50 gundas. What's the translation of gunda?
Thug.
Thug? Thug. I'm going to come with 50 gundas and we're going to break the temple down again. And Mr. Sethi said to his son, Bridge Mohan, bring my gun and revolver. And then he said to Mr. Matrey, 50 is not enough. I have 250 cartridges. So you'll have to bring at least 251 people if you want to tear down the temple. So anyway, that was the end of that exchange. So it was really raining and I stayed up all night. And we had a jeep. I mentioned it last night. We had a jeep. And Sridhar Swami, he also stayed up. I don't remember if we, because there were two nights. I don't remember if we both stayed up both nights or we. But anyway, he stayed up in the jeep, chanting japa. And so Brij Mohan Sethi, the senior Mr. Sethi's son, went up to him and said, Maharaj, what are you doing here? And he said, I'm waiting for the gundas to come. And if they come, I'm right in the jeep and I'm going to run away. So I'm sitting right in the jeep, right at the edge of the property, and I'm going to run away. That was his sense of humor. It showed his staunchness. He was really staying up all night and chanting, but also his sense of humor.